It is our privilege to have as this morning's devotional speaker, Elder L. Tom Perry, Assistant to the Council of the Twelve. We're also pleased to have with us this morning Sister Virginia Lee Perry. Elder and Sister Perry were married in the Logan Temple. They are the parents of three children. Their son Lee is currently attending BYU. Their daughter Barbara has been a student here. And the third member of their family, 16-year-old Gay, will, we anticipate, be a student at BYU one day. Elder Perry did his undergraduate and his graduate work in finance at Utah State University. The Perrys moved to Boston 7 years ago, where Elder Perry became vice president for finance of Leechmere Sales, an appliance and hardware department store in Boston. He then took a position as treasurer for R.H. Stearns Company, which operates 6 department stores in the Boston area. Elder Perry's church service began with a mission to the northern states in 1942, after which he served for 2 years in the U.S. Marines in the Pacific. Since that time, he has been a member of the New York State High Council, counselor in the Weston Ward Bishopric, counselor in the stake presidency in Boston, and president of the Boston Stake. That was the position in which he was serving when he was appointed as an assistant to the 12, October 6, 1972. We're very pleased to have as our devotional speaker today, Elder L. Tom Perry.
Thank you, President. I'm delighted to have this great swimming team here. I could have used them as my example for my talk if I'd only known you'd had them in such a prominent position in our great assemblage today. I'd like to tell you about one of the most inspiring sermons I've ever had the privilege of hearing. I heard it at the time I entered high school, when I was a sophomore attending Logan High. Even though much of the sermon has been forgotten over the years, the central theme is vividly remembered. The sermon was delivered by a member of our stake presidency. He was the owner and operator of the local hardware store, a man familiar with hand tools. And so it was natural for him to talk about the most common of all, the hammer. He told a story about a French carpenter in the early 1800s who was having difficulty in his profession to keep his productivity high because of the defective hammer he was using. He had trouble all of the time with the hammerhead flying off. So he would spend half of his time looking for his flying hammerhead. He tried everything to keep the hammerhead on. He tried nailing it to the handle. He tried soaking it in water. He even tried to glue it on. But each process would only last for a short period of time before he would again find himself chasing his hammerhead. All of the carpenters in the country were having the same problem. They seemed to be content with their situation, all except this particular man. He desired to be the best carpenter in France, but his efficiency was limited to the tools that he was using. He reasoned that the only way he could become the best was to build a better hammer. So each evening after work, he would spend time pondering and thinking and trying new ways to develop a better hammer. Finally, after years, he discovered the right concept. It was a simple solution, but oh, how workable. The process he developed was very simple. Just make the bottom of the hammer smaller than the top up here. Then prepare the handle so it would fit in the smaller part. And then by driving a wedge into the top of the hammer, there was no way in which the head could come off without removing the wedge. He had discovered a better hammer, the best one ever known, and no longer was it necessary for him to chase his flying hammerheads. Now that's a simple discovery, not a complicated one, not the world's greatest discovery, but in his own field, he became the best. The message and central theme of this great member of our state presidency was centered around a poem, much of which I can't remember, but the part I can was this. If you can't be a pine at the top of the hill, be a scrub in the valley below, but be the best little scrub by the side of the rill. Be the best of whatever you are. I'd like to address myself to three areas I'd like to challenge you in being the best of the potential our Father in Heaven has blessed you with. Now first, it's concerning your blessing of being a child of God. One of the greatest weaknesses of most of us is our lack of faith in ourselves. One of our common failings is that we depreciate our tremendous worth. A firm I was associated with some time ago embarked on a great executive training program at considerable expense to themselves. The program was open to all who expressed an interest in it. All they had to do was go and sign up. The firm paid the cost and even allowed the employees off an hour during their working day for classroom time. A free opportunity to be educated in the art of management. During the 2 years the program was offered, only 3% of the employees signed up for the course. I've observed in other situations that this 3% statistic seems to be somewhat reliable, as the number of the divine children of our Father in Heaven who have enough faith in themselves to be willing to make something really important out of their lives. Now, we're a special group assembled here because of the light and knowledge the gospel has given to us concerning our potential. Surely we could never be numbered among the 97% who are not taking advantage of our opportunities. The scriptures tell us about our divine nature. You remember what the psalmist said? O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. When I consider thy heavens and the work of thy fingers and the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and has crowned him with glory and honor. Have you ever thought of yourself as being a junior angel with all the power that that could give you to make something of yourself? Brigham Young defined our eternal relationship with God, our eternal Father, in these words. Things were first created spiritually. The Father actually begat the spirits, and they were brought forth to live with Him. I want to tell each one of you here that you were well acquainted with God, our eternal Father. You were well acquainted with Him, for there is not a soul of you that has not lived in His house and dwelt with Him year after year. And yet you are seeking to become acquainted with Him, when the fact is, you have merely forgotten what you know about Him. There is not a person here today but what is a son or daughter of that being. In the spirit world, Their spirits were first begotten and brought forth, and they lived there with their parents for ages before they came here. We are sons and daughters of celestial beings. A germ of deity dwells in us. We are children of our Father, His offspring, of the same family. We belong to Him by birthright. We are all His children. History has abundant evidence of man's potential when he allows himself to be led by the Spirit of God. You remember the story of Joseph, who was sold into Egypt, how he was sent by his father to check on the welfare of his brothers who were tending the flocks. And when they saw him coming, they seized upon the opportunity of finding him alone to satisfy their jealous desires, and sold him for 20 pieces of silver to merchants on their way to Egypt. In Egypt, Joseph was purchased by Potiphar, the captain of the guards. And even as a servant in a far-off country, a slave to a foreigner, he soon distinguished himself. And the scripture records, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had was put into his hand." So Joseph immediately became prominent in Egypt. But his life continued to have its ups and downs. He finds himself falsely accused and loses faith with his master and is cast into prison. And again, because of his faithfulness, the Lord provides an opportunity for him to interpret Pharaoh's dream. Joseph was given the opportunity because of this interpretation to serve Pharaoh. So he so distinguished himself in this service that he became a ruler in Egypt while only being 30 years of age. Now listen to the honor and glory that Pharaoh bestowed on him. "And Pharaoh said to his servants, 'Can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the Spirit of God is?' And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, 'For as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to thy words shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou.' And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, 'See, I have set thee over all the lands of Egypt.' And Pharaoh took off his ring and put it on Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, 'Bow the knee.' And he made him ruler over the land of Egypt." Now note the characteristic that distinguished Joseph to both Potiphar and to the Pharaoh: a man in whom the Spirit of God is. Each of us have the choice of being worldly, like the brothers of Joseph, or living worthy of the blessings of the Lord, like unto Joseph. President Romney has said, "We mortals are in very deed the literal offspring of God. If a man understood, believed, and accepted this truth and lived by it, our sick and dying society would be reformed and redeemed." and men would have peace and eternal joy. With all of the divine knowledge burning within your souls, surely much is expected of you. As a child of God, be the best of whatever you are. Now, the second challenge I wish to give to you is service in our Father in Heaven's kingdom here on earth. One of the most exciting blessings that can come to us as members of the church is to live in this modern day when the church is experiencing its greatest period of growth. Each day since the restoration of the gospel, there has been greater opportunity for service than there was the day before. Tomorrow, there'll even be greater opportunity than there was today. Certainly, this is the great day spoken of by the ancient prophet when he said, "And it shall come to pass in the last days, when the mountain of the house of the Lord's house shall be established in the tops of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and nations shall flow into it. And many people shall go and say, 'Come ye, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths.'" As I travel throughout the church, the common cry I hear from stake presidents is, "If I only had another bishop like Brother Jones, or another Relief Society president like Sister Smith, or another young adult representative like Sister Brown, or another home teacher like Brother Dole, what a difference I could make in this state." When asked by a group of full-time missionaries recently as to what was the greatest challenge facing the church today, I was quick to respond, "It's the challenge of growth." And I wonder how many hundreds of thousands have not embraced the gospel at this time and are being held up because of our lack of a solid leadership base. Then, too, we must examine our effectiveness as leaders when only 50 to 60% of our families are presided over by fathers who are active in the church. You see the great demand there is for leadership in our Father in Heaven's kingdom. Now consider the great privilege you are presently receiving to prepare you to be more able builders in our Father in Heaven's kingdom as it relates to the instruction the Lord has given to us. Zion must increase in beauty and in holiness. Her borders must be enlarged. Her stakes must be strengthened. Yea, verily I say unto you, Zion must arise and put on her beautiful garments. Some labor under the misconception that professions may be so demanding that they will not have time for full church service. My experience has been that church service is the greatest teacher you can receive here on earth. Let me give you just one example. When I was a young man in my late 20s, I was offered the position of a controller in a department store in central Idaho. After being in the retail business but 6 months, I had a month after taking this position of working in the store before I could move my family to be with me to find a place of residence for them. During that month, I almost lived in the store. A 24-hour work day was quite common during that particular time, as I would stay right on the job and not even go home to rest at night, trying to keep up with the assignments that I'd been given. I was having a desperate time trying to learn a new job and to keep pace with the responsibilities I had received. Just after my family arrived and they were settled, a car pulled up in front of our home, and I was asked to come out and join two men who were seated in the car. When I entered the car, I found there a member of our stake presidency and a member of our ward bishopric. I was shocked with the announcement that a change was being made in our bishopric, and the counselor was being called to be the new bishop, and he had selected me to be his counselor. My first reaction was to say, "No, I'm on a new job, I'm too busy." The training of my parents rang a little louder in my ears in this first reaction, and I agreed to serve. That first experience in a bishopric was the best education I have ever received in organization and management. I found that the Lord's way was transferable to business. As I practiced in business the techniques that I was learning in church service, I became more efficient in my business assignments. I soon found that I had more time for my family, church, and business responsibilities. Then the second great gift of that experience was the most rewarding that can come to life, next to you being with your family, and that is enjoying the spirit of service in our Father in Heaven's kingdom. Now you have been blessed in the most exciting era in the church history. Don't deprive yourself of the most rewarding opportunity by being prepared and willing to serve the Master when calls come to you. As a servant in His kingdom, be the best of whatever you are. Now, the final area I'd like to briefly touch on is our obligation to the nations to which we are citizens. I've just returned from one of the great nations of the world. How impressed we were with this great people. They were so friendly and considerate. I would tell my wife, if you want to have a good time in this country, go out and get yourself lost, for these people are so great at giving directions when you ask for assistance. They would not only tell you where to go, but they would repeat it two or three times to be certain you understood. When I told Elder Hanks this experience when I returned, he says, "Yes, they size up the people, and those that look a little stupid, they take more time with." This country is in one of its most difficult periods. After suffering during World War II, they went into a great rebuilding program. And as they accomplished and things became easy, they started to relax and wanted to just enjoy life. Their great interest became the pub and the television. The industry, when it found itself in difficulty, rather than attempt to solve their problems, thought it was easier and more secure to turn over their management to the government and nationalize it. One by one, the government found itself in more and more businesses. To offset this great national power, the workers organized themselves into national unions, and the union leadership found themselves with such control that they could paralyze the nation at any time they felt it to be their advantage to do so by calling a strike. A strike was in process while we were there. Public buildings were completely without heat. TV stations closed down at 10:30 at night. Stores were allowed to only have on lights during half of a working day. Shopping during those periods where lights were not allowed was some experience. You'd enter a store, find one light over the entrance. As you would step into the selling departments, a clerk would pick up a Coleman lantern and follow you into the department to show off the merchandise. One store we visited, the temperature was 45 degrees. They had been without heat all winter. Having a haircut was some experience in this place. I went in the barber shop, and it was cold and dark as I entered. The barber seated me in a chair and then ran downstairs to a little handmade generator that he had developed himself out of his former Honda. One neon tube came on when he started up his Honda. and he commenced to cut my hair. Imagine how relieved I was to go outside and find my head still on after being in the barbershop in almost darkness. On top of all of this, hanging over their heads was the realization that if the strike was allowed to continue another 2 weeks, all power would be turned off. Under the economic pressure, the government fell and a general election was called. We were there to see 85% of the eligible voters turn out to cast their ballots. But the election just highlighted the problem rather than solved it. They had been so disinterested for so long, the election did not turn up any new leadership. One party received a popular vote majority, margin. The other one received the greatest number of seats in their governing body. Neither had a majority to rule, and a small third party was now in control. They could bargain for the best deal. The ability to organize the government rested in their hands. Their radical leaders could now demand positions of greater importance and power in the new government that was beyond what they were able to receive as representatives of the people. To me, a classic example of what occurs when complacency and lack of interest in government occurs rather than the willingness to sacrifice for its preservation. I wish that this was just an isolated case, but we can hardly turn on the news without hearing of events happening similar to this in almost every country. Now you find yourself at an age when you're expected to contribute to the leadership of your nation. I challenge you as a citizen to be the best of whatever you are. Now we know the ultimate outcome of what happens to nations when they turn to things of man. We know the suffering, bloodshed, and sorrow and despair that will follow if they pursue this direction. Of course, the immediate question comes to mind when we see our current state of affairs is why we must be knocked to our knees before we start on the road to recovery. The answer is obvious. The cycle can be reversed at any point. All that is needed is inspired leadership to give direction. And where can we stand? Where can we find that leadership today? I stand in a unique position today because I'm looking at the potential great leaders of the world. What great potential and power there is within you to embark in the service of our God and be similar to a Joseph who found a way to touch the lives even in a strange and foreign country because God was in him, or the man who developed the hammer, who did a simple thing to become the best of what he was. Isn't this the time for those who have a knowledge of the truth and light of the gospel to stop testing the line between right and wrong and to enthusiastically embark on the course we know to be right? Because we have had 150 years almost of continuous revelation from a prophet of God to direct us in the course we should follow. Isn't this the time in our preparation when we find ourselves preparing to be just a little better than we were and then to do just a little bit more? Isn't this the time in our church service when we do all that our priesthood leaders would require of us and then just a little bit more? Isn't this a time in our nation when we fulfill our responsibilities as citizens and then do just a little bit more? My son found it necessary to leave the campus for a few hours this weekend and return home to negotiate an advance on his allowance. And while there, he studied my talk and said what it needed was a little poetic flavoring. In about 2.5 minutes, he penned these lines of rhyme for our instruction under the title, To Be the Best of What I Am. I am the best at what I do, and I do all I can. I am the best in at least one thing. When so I think, then so I am. To serve my fellow man as president or plumber, the best I can, brings to me the greatest joy to stay, though winds of circumstance may seldom blow my way. I remain a servant of God, an executor in His righteous plan. To be a child of God, inherently filled with potential, and then to blame whatever fortunes may come on environment seems a bit deceitful. I am a child of God, and this one thing I know. You too are a child of God, not on earth for merely show, for you and I came here to grow. I am the best at what I do, and I do all I can. I am the best in at least one thing. When so I think, then so I am. I give you my witness that I know by personal experience that the more you serve the Lord, the greater is His blessings to you. There's no greater joy than being a builder in His kingdom. And I challenge you with the great power and potential that is within you to be the best of whatever you are. May the Lord bless you that this may be your course. I humbly pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.